This week on BOAG World, it's all about design. Design at Google, moving beyond user-centric design and designing with audio. Hello and welcome to our wonderful show for the week. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well. This is exciting, isn't it? Because we're trying out broadcasting live.
I know. I'm really nervous.
But but what's really quite funny is that we've just released one episode. This is the 7th of February we're recording this. We just released one episode today, and now we're really confusing people by now recording next week's episode.
Yes.
Which will be the 7 days after the 7th. 14th.
Indeed.
See, advanced maths, that's impressive.
That's Valentine's Day, isn't it?
Ooh, happy Valentine's Day, Marcus. I'm sorry I haven't got you anything.
Don't say happy Valentine's Day to me, that's horrid.
Why?
Because it's like...
But I love you. But I do, Marcus. You're very important to me.
Oh, I feel very...
That sounds very homophobic of you, if I may say so. Or is it just me? Very BOAG-phobic, probably is a better description.
Exactly. Well, look, Michael Schofield says, hooray, my face.
I think that's because he's managed to get his little icon to appear.
Exactly, yeah. Look, there I am. Woo!
We're now going to be totally distracted. What we're thinking is it will be quite cool to have this going out live so that people can pop in and they can make suggestions and make comments on the articles we're talking about. We figured it might be a bit more interactive. But this is only a trial. If this doesn't work today, if it goes horribly wrong, if we learn to hate it with a deep loathing, then we won't be doing it again. But maybe we'll, maybe we won't. Who knows? But what you will need to do is, if we are going to do it again, you need to be following us on Twitter if you wish to join, because that's where I will be announcing it. So follow me at BOAGWorld.
Or me.
No. Well, no, there's no point in following you at Marcus67, because you wouldn't announce this, would you?
No, I wouldn't, but I'm just saying it for the hell of it.
You just want people to follow you.
Yeah, I need to make it over 2,000 followers.
What you do need is people need to be sending Marcus suggestions about what to include for his segment of the show, because he's useless at picking things.
I think that's unfair.
Excuse me, who picked this week's for you?
I did.
No, you didn't, you fat liar. You're such a liar.
I did. No, I didn't, but I did. It was to do with the fact that somebody came up with an idea about audio on Twitter. Then I said, oh, I wrote about that once. Then you said, oh, I looked at this particular article. So it was everyone, man.
It was a group effort, is what you're trying to persuade me to believe, and
yes.
I'm not convinced.
Actually, I was going to look that up, wasn't I? I must do that.
I am so busy at the moment.
So am I. I'm busier than you.
It's awesome, isn't it? I'm really quite excited about it. And it's really cool stuff we're doing. So we're doing... I love this project. I won't mention client names. I'm doing this great project at the moment where I don't have to produce anything. It's awesome. I just have to... like express opinions. I'm basically a sounding board that somebody wants to talk about their web strategy and the web governance issues that they're having and all this kind of stuff, and I've just got to listen and make suggestions and not produce anything, which is perfect for me, isn't it, really? It's my perfect project.
But you were moaning about it a little bit as well.
Because I had to read it. I don't like reading or making effort. And then what else are we doing, which is really cool? I've got a really good project that I'm really excited about, but we're not allowed to talk. Why am I having this conversation?
I don't know.
Because I can't talk about any of these. But it's really busy at the moment, and cool and exciting. Lots of consultancy work and advising people about strategies and sounding important.
Yes, exactly. It's a lot of consultancy, actually.
It is.
I mean, the usual kind of number of design and tech projects thrown in, but it seems that we're doing a lot more strategy.
And we're doing cool native, hybrid apps, mobile apps, which is fun.
No, that's a native one.
Oh, yes, it's gone native now, hasn't it?
It's gone native.
It's gone native.
Yes, anyway, so no one cares because we can't say what it is.
I know, but it's so exciting. And then and then Ed is doing this. Have you seen his wireframe thing that he's doing?
No.
Oh, it's awesome. I posted a video on it today, link in the show notes, just showing it off. It's really clever. It's wireframing, mm-hmm. but responsive wireframing.
Okay.
So actually you can see the different sizes and stuff, and it's really client-friendly, and it looks gorgeous.
It actually does that.
What, responsive wireframing? Yeah. This does it better. much
whatever
better.
It is.
Whatever it is, Ed's done it better.
All I can, referring to Ed, all I can smell is his pipe.
Ah, he started smoking a pipe.
Now.
Yes, Ed has turned 50 at the age of, what is it?
31.
31. He's turned 50 and has started smoking a pipe.
It really suits him.
Which, yeah, absolutely. It just looks right, doesn't it? So there we go. It's really exciting at the moment. Isn't it funny? I was commenting on this on Twitter that I am completely reversed, right? So if things are slow and there's not much happening, I get really down and a bit depressed and don't know what to do with myself. If it gets manically busy and I have got more work than I can possibly handle, I get all overexcited and enjoy myself. So I'm some kind of masochistic kind of psychopath or something. It's weird. I don't really quite understand why I'm like that, but I do like it busy.
Well, yeah, I think most people do. I mean, but there's busy and there's busy.
Oh, I like insanity, I think. I like it where there is no way I can possibly get everything done.
Okay.
I know, I'm strange. What can I say?
That's okay, that's fine. I've got plenty of other things I can give you.
No. I don't like it that much. Don't like it when you give me things, because that means you've got less to do.
It is recording, yes.
Are you panicking?
No. I'm just making sure that I actually got you saying what you
said. Oh, I see. So I'll deny it.
So I can play it back to you.
It was an impersonator or something. Well, not as bad as you. I love the way you kind of... I do recognise that I'm not the easiest people to work with always. Right. And it's the way that you, with that Skype conversation we had yesterday, where what you wanted to do is ask me to go to a pitch meeting with you. But you were so afraid of asking me outright that you pussyfooted around it, didn't you?
Afraid isn't the right word, Paul.
Right.
I wanted to make it so you couldn't say no.
But unfortunately, you caught me in a mood where I would have said yes straight away anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know I'm temperamental. I have weaknesses, I know this. Should we talk about web design?
Could do.
This is going to be a really cool show, and you're going to enjoy it because it's all design.
Right.
It's wall-to-wall design.
Good.
Which should be entertaining.
So let's hear it.
Let's start off by talking about design. So, first up is Google, right?
Right.
I was a bit disappointed because I mentioned this post over lunch today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, we're going to be covering on the podcast about how Google have gone about redesigning all of their apps and how they look so great now and how everything's so much better and how have they done that. And yeah, I was a bit disappointed. The overwhelming response was meh. Was that there wasn't a feeling that Google had really turned things around. Well, I think they have. I think they've done an amazing job with design recently.
Really?
Yeah, that was the reaction I got over lunch. Why do you... I really like their new interface. I love their Gmail client for iOS. I love their Google Maps on iOS. It's mainly the iOS apps I like. But I really like the design of Google Plus and the Google Plus app. I think they're doing some really good stuff. And suddenly they've got this really kind of consistent look and feel going across everything.
It's all right.
You're purposely just winding me up now. I'm sure the chat room will support me in my claim that Google are doing great stuff. I think they're doing really interesting stuff. And what I think is so interesting, well, there's this article basically on The Verge, and obviously there'll be a link in the show notes, which is talking about redesigning Google and about how Larry Page, when he took control back of Google and he became CEO again, has basically stipulated we're redesigning all of our products from the ground up, visual appearance wise. And he's created this amazing revolution, I think, within Google to improve their apps and stuff. What's really nice about this particular article is that although you can read it all, which it's actually got a video, a big video about where they've gone in, they've interviewed all the various people. And it was quite interesting because they were going in expecting to have this moment of kind of, you know, they'll go into the organization, they'll be introduced to somebody who owns the Google design brand and will be the god behind this huge, you know, innovation, the kind of Johnny Ives of Google. But there is no such person, right? It's this very distributed, very Google kind of approach to design that, to be quite frank, I wouldn't think would work. It's very decentralized. And you never think of design... You always think you need a designer and there is this one person that kind of owns the look and feel, but that's not at all how they've worked. Instead, what they seem to have done is taken designers from all across the organisation, put them in a room together, locked the door, and made them iterate. Well, they haven't made them do anything, but they've iterated and iterated and iterated, producing thousands and thousands of different design concepts to kind of establish a new direction for the website and establish where they're going. And it's really interesting how they've kind of gone in the complete opposite direction that Apple have in terms of their design approach. Yeah, it seems to have worked really well. In fact, I would go as far as saying at the moment, Google are doing more impressive stuff on iOS app design than Apple are, which has seemed to be floundering a little bit from the design point of view. And what's the other incredible thing about the approach that Google have taken is it happened so fast, right? Larry Page came along and they were starting, and said, we're now going to redesign our products from the ground up. They'd like had done it in 3 months. Mm. And I get the impression they hadn't really done any user testing. They haven't done any of the kind of normal stuff. They've just basically relied on the expertise of their designers. They've sat them down in a room and gone, go for it. And these guys have churned out amazing stuff. So it's quite an interesting read, this one. And I think what I took away from it was that, well, decentralized design is possible. You can have multiple designers working together to produce something quite impressive, which I think is a little bit counterintuitive to what we normally say about designers.
Yeah, I think that kind of works, or has worked in this case, because they had a position of pretty much anything we do will look great compared to what we've got.
yeah, that
which is
help.
Always a great place to be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And secondly, it seems that they've been trusted to just get on and do it.
Yeah, that was the other thing that's really come out of this, is that, how strong leadership makes such an important difference. We found that, haven't we? The projects that work best is where the CEO has come in and said, this is going to happen. Listen to these guys. Let them get on with it and do it.
Yes.
And that always produces the best results. So, the fact that Larry Page has come in and done that, I think it goes a long way. Absolutely. And also this idea of kind of fast and intuitive and lots of iterations and endless debate seems to have really worked for them, and it is something that I find quite interesting as well. So it's a really interesting approach, really good article. Highly recommend you check it out. I think that's probably all I got to say on it, except try doing things differently. I think that's if there's one underlying message out of today's show, it's you don't always have to go with perceived wisdom. You can try things differently, and it doesn't always need, as we will come on to next, actually, to be user-centric design, and we go through this long process with lots of research. Fast, intuitive design done by an experienced team with good backing can achieve just as much good stuff, really. So there you go, let's move on, I think. All right, so I said that we were going to look more at this idea of breaking normal conventions and in design, and this next article does exactly that, written by Kenneth Bowles, who we know reasonably well. It's Anna's other half, I believe. I presume they're still together. I might just massively put my foot in it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, well, obviously he used to work for Clear Left.
Used to work for Clear Left. Now works for Twitter. Works on TweetDeck. And this is posted on the new List Apart site.
Because I really like the new List Apart site.
Yes, I know.
I like this kind of really
stark.
Yeah, but everything's just perfectly kind of lined up lovely, but it makes they've cut off the top of the word. That actually makes Lee angry.
Yeah, it was really funny. Actually, we have a little chat room, hip chat, we use, link in the show notes, because it's a really good chat facility, and he really was ranting, which is quite interesting. I think what annoys me more, I'm okay with that, actually, a List Apart being cut off, but I have a bigger problem with at the bottom of the page where it has for people who make websites, and it's just the bottom cut off. And it cuts it off at an awkward point for me. So there you go.
Surely that's the same amount of cut off as
no,
the top.
It's not.
I bet it is.
No.
I can't see that because I've got to get rid of that.
The top one cuts off much nearer the centre of the letters. But you couldn't do that on the bottom because it wouldn't be readable.
Right, I'm looking at the S there.
He's measuring it now, for crying out loud.
It's got to be an S. No, it's identical, Paul. See, you just need to trust me.
It's wrong.
Trust me.
It's wrong, wrong.
Is it like when you put hinges on doors? If you make them equal, it looks wrong.
Yes.
Do you know that?
Yes. Yeah, you can't do that. Michael in the chat room agrees with me that the header's wrong. Oh, but then Dennis agrees with Marcus.
Boo. Yeah. That's no good, is it?
I just think it's quite cool. Anyway,
I do like it. I'm not saying I don't like the site. I think it's a nice site, and it's very, very readable, which is obviously the main thing that they were trying to achieve.
And
which it does perfectly. I just think... But then that's the great thing. That's what good design, especially on something like a list apart, it should make you go, divide opinion. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You know, there would be nothing worse than a bland site that was neither one thing or another. So, no, totally, totally with them on it, even though my personal taste, I'm not so keen. Right, anyway, that was what we were going to talk about.
Talk about the article.
Kenneth Bowles has written an article looking beyond user-centric design. I loved this article.
You did. You were saying how much you loved it.
I loved it for two contrasting reasons.
Right.
One is that I thought it had absolutely superb content, right?
Mm-hmm.
And second reason that I love it is because Kenneth makes me smile when he writes.
It's because you don't understand half the words he
writes. Exactly. Me and Kenneth, as people, probably could not be more opposite. He's intelligent, he's articulate, he's well-read, and he's a superb writer. And
you could have just stopped at intelligent, couldn't you, really?
Yes. And I don't understand a thing he says, right? He uses... Let's see if I can find some of the really funny paragraphs, because some of these paragraphs just make me hoot. To the point where I actually can't pronounce half the words that he says because I don't even know what they mean. Where's the one? There's one really funny one.
I know.
If I look on postmodern, he mentions postmodern. Oh, I'm sure he did. Or modernist. Perhaps it was modernist. Here we go.
This is
good podcasting. Right. Throughout history, daring work from iconoclasts have sparked entire movements and thus transformed creative practices. The transition between neoclassical and modernist architecture eras, for example, wasn't simply a case of replacing Doric columns and perpendicular glass. It was a total reframing of architecture and its values. Modernity surpassed antiquity.
You really can't say it.
I can't speak.
Usurped antiquity.
Oh, usurped antiquity. I don't understand. Yeah, I went to art college for 3 years and they use words like that all the time and I didn't understand them.
I'm rereading it.
And if it was a different person, right, I would say, okay, you're just using those long words to look impressive, right? I try and make things as simplistic as possible, right? But no, Kenneth's not doing this out of presumption. This is who he really is. and I just think it's superb. But it's a brilliant. The points he's making in this article, I think, are absolutely and utterly spot on. And I enjoyed every moment of reading it. And I highly recommend you check it out as well. So let me tell you a little bit about what he's covering. So what is he getting at here? Well, he's getting at the fact that user-centric design, which has become such the way that we design these days, don't we? We're all like to be user-centric design. That is not the only way. There's also what he calls the genius design, which is, I'm an expert, listen to me, I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it relies on your years of experience as a designer that you know what you're doing. That's why we do things like expert reviews, which we do at Headscape. Then there's self-design, which is essentially you're designing for yourself, so that if you happen to be in line with the target audience, that works very well because you don't need to do a load of user research because you're designing for you, all right? Mm. And then the final one, which is one that I personally like, which is task design. So it's the idea it's not so important who the person is as much as what they're trying to achieve and making sure you facilitate what they're trying to achieve. So there's lots of different ways of designing. And he's basically challenging the supremacy of user-centric design. He's not saying it's wrong. He's not saying it should go away. He's just saying there are other approaches, and there are downsides to user-centric design, the biggest being it takes a long time. You know, and he argues that some of the design research that we do...
Was actually a little bit related to the previous article.
Yeah, that's my point. Yes, it kind of it goes on very well from that.
Yeah, if you've got good designers, just trust them, get on, do it.
Exactly. And he actually says that. He says, one of my favourite lines
in
the whole thing is, weak leadership overtests in lieu of trusting designers to make decisions.
Yeah.
And spot on. Totally agree with that. So it's a really, really good article. He's got some really great stuff. He talks about how sometimes all the research that we do is actually wasted effort. You know, someone with the organisation... someone with experience as not only a designer but also as an attentive user has built up an unconscious repertoire of patterns and approaches that suit various contexts. As this library grows, it frees the designer from the need to research every problem. You know, and
I'm nodding sagely.
Yeah, and it's true. I've got to say, you know, I still think a lot of times user testing is worthwhile. But I've got to say, most of the time I know what the result's going to be.
Yeah. User testing is, it's often put in place to sort out arguments.
Yes.
Rather than because whatever you're going to design would be awful without it.
Yeah.
I often use usability testing as an example of stuff that's good to do, but it's not absolutely necessary should you not have the budget.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I often use that one. I tend to use the line that what we design for you isn't going to be an unusable turkey if we don't test it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might turn out that we would find issues with it once it's gone live, but
you can fix them.
Not the end of the world. So, yeah, basically.
In my mind, the main reason for doing things like user testing and design testing and all of these other things that we do that are part of user-centric design is primarily to bring the client with us on the journey. It's to prove that they can trust us and they can trust that we know what we're doing. I get the impression he dismisses that as an argument a little bit, but I do think that is a worthwhile role for user-centric design, is to prove that you know what you're talking about. When you're working with someone that has no reason to trust you, they don't know you necessarily. So, you know, and I think we do use user-centric design to justify our design decisions. And he writes, while user-centric design is methodical, it is manifestly not scientific, which is quite interesting. There has never been a universal truth to design. While user-centric design is methodical, it is manifestly not scientific. I've got that twice. There never can be a universal truth. I've copied and pasted the same bit twice. I'm driving the point home.
Exactly.
By repeating it, I'm driving the point home. That's really embarrassing.
I'm thinking, you're saying the same thing, Paul.
Yes, I am. But I have to say, I think that is a really good point. That we kind of use user-centric design as a scientific tool to justify what we're doing. But design is always going to be opinion to some degree. But where I think it comes invaluable is it shifts the opinion away from being designer versus client to try and get the user's opinion into the mix and get the client thinking in terms of the user. It has its place. But he's not at any point saying it doesn't. He's just kind of saying we shouldn't be obsessed about it. Which is, you know, why he goes on about this weak leadership over test in lieu of trusting the designer to make the decision. But the one bit that really got me of the article and the bit that kind of excited me incredibly about the whole thing is that he talks about the cost of business objectives, right? He says... It's unsurprisingly that user-centric processes can skew inexperienced designers' loyalties away from business priorities. When a designer adopts simplistic, reductive arguments that ignore business reality, it undermines them. And this I have been saying for years, right back to when I wrote the website owner's manual, that I didn't use it, say it in fancy words like that, but essentially... I've been saying, look, business objectives have to come first. And sometimes if you become so obsessed with user-centric that you can undermine the business objectives, and that you should never do that. And that's an important thing to remember. So, brilliant article. Agreed. Brilliant article. So what was interesting about that last post is it was about challenging the norm, wasn't it? Challenging the preconceptions. Actually, both of our posts so far have been about that.
Yes.
And do you know what, Marcus?
What?
So's our third. There's a theme.
There is a theme here.
It's good. For once. Normally, we don't have themes, but we're having a theme this week. It's almost like we're organised. If you're outside of user-centric design, what is the biggest in thing you can think of within web design at the moment? What is everybody talking about? The thing that we all must do.
That would be...
No. I know what you're thinking, and it's not that.
What, the thing that everyone's talking about in the web design community at the moment?
Look, I've just sent you the frigging URL.
Stretching this point out a bit longer.
Are you stretching out? Okay, there's been a lot of controversy on the internet at the moment.
There is, about web responsive community. Design.
Okay. Fair enough. Now, a lot of people would be wondering what we were actually talking about there. And they will never know.
I think they probably already know anyway. Yeah. But anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, so responsive design is this. It isn't. There's no controversy around it. It's just generally accepted that this is the way things should be, isn't it? We should all be building responsive websites. But should we? He says in a teaser kind of way. Find out after the ads. No. really interesting that a company called GoCardless.com, which is like a starty uppy kind of... direct debity payment
something else
system-y,
with a Y on the
thing. Yeah. Have decided with their new site not to make it responsive.
Really,
really interesting. And I really enjoyed this article because it drove home the post, as did the previous one. Drove home the idea that one size doesn't fit all. Right, that just because some people use user-centric design doesn't mean everybody has to in all circumstances. Just because some people use responsive design doesn't mean you have to in all circumstances.
You've got to persuade me of this one.
Right.
And the reason, and I'll tell you why.
Why is that?
My eyes have gone. They've just, and it is literally, I think I posted a picture on the internet just before, a year ago basically, before my 45th birthday, with a pair of £5...
Yeah.
Long-sightedness
glasses.
Once I can't see stuff up close.
Yes.
But I didn't really need them. I found that if I look at a computer all day, now, if my eyes are tired, I struggle to look at my watch.
Yes.
See what the time is.
Right.
So I've gone boom like that in a year. Responsive design is a thing from heaven.
Right.
Because I can, it's just like, wow, everything's big, I can see it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Right.
So I'm very interested to hear what this guy has to say.
Well, it's quite interesting. I really liked it. They decided, they had a responsive website, they were going through a redesign process, and they decided to ditch the responsive website.
Yes.
Right? And I can kind of see where they're coming from, because we hold up responsive design as this kind of silver bullet that cures all known ills to man, you know, and makes everything all right.
I think that's a bit unfair.
Oh, there is a lot of that kind of being.
Well, okay. You could argue that. I think if you said that, you know, your existing non-responsive site is a waste of time, you know, you're damaging your brand or whatever, then yeah, I'd agree with that. You probably aren't damaging it.
No.
But to say that, but to go from responsive back to...
Yes.
That seems like an odd thing to do.
Well, I mean, their logic basically is that responsive design takes a lot of time, right?
Yes, true.
Building a site that's responsive... You know, we'll add, they say, almost as much again to the length of time. I think that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but it certainly adds a lot of work to a website. And what they did is they sat down and they looked at their analytics, right? And they saw that only 2% of users were mobile users on their particular site.
Really?
On their site. okay, I'm not arguing with their own statistics. What they probably haven't, where I would be more interested, and this is, I think a lot of people are doing this at the moment, they're looking at their mobile stats and going, they're really, really low. Why are we wasting time with all this mobile stuff? But what I think you've got to do is look at the level of growth between last year and this year, and then extrapolate out, because that website's going to exist over a few years. So, okay, it might only be 2% now, but it was 0.3% 6 months ago. So, you know, at that rate of growth, it's going to be significant very quickly.
I would check it between now and in the last month,
for example. Exactly. So, but setting that aside, they made a business decision that they only had 2% of their people using mobile. And, you know, it was it worth them putting a lot of extra time into making the site responsive for 2% of their audience? Or were they better off, in actual fact, making, you know, taking that extra effort and putting it into the full design for their site, the desktop version, for want of a better idea, rather than doing a kind of half-assed desktop version and a half-assed, you know, responsive version, because they had limited time and limited resources?
Sir.
Yes.
I have a comment on the from the comments.
Yes.
Fanfarian.
Yes.
Says, we only have 3% mobile users, but we have a growth of over 200% every year, monthly about 30 to 50%.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's...
There you go.
Yeah, that kind of shows that growth is a massively important part of it. But for them, they looked at that and they made the judgment. And they, you know, they said, okay, we're going to spend more time on the desktop version of the site rather than building a kind of half-assed responsive site. I can accept that, actually. And the argument that they put forward is, well, Zooming does work, right? Mm. It works really well. You know, in your situation about reading it.
It's irritating having to Zoom.
Is it really?
Yes, it is, because I know there's a better version.
Yes, I guess so. I mean,
because you have to Zoom and then you can't read it all, because you have to get in the, and then you, like,
yeah,
where was it?
But, okay, they've done,
for?
I think they've
not
done
great
some,
usability,
I think they have done some reasonably nice stuff on their Zooming, that they thought about their site in such a way that the grid system works quite well zooming in and out of content. So they have put some extra thought in it. But to be honest, I'm not convinced by it either. I prefer a responsive site.
Mm.
But what I do love is the fact, you know, that there are people out there presenting the other sides of arguments. You know, and that's so good that people aren't accepting the standard thinking, whether it be Kenneth and his post on user-centric design, whether it be, you know, this post on responsive design, that there are people challenging those preconceptions and going, okay, is this the right way to go? Let's try it another way. Let's see what happens, you know. And even accepting there might be more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak.
Well, what I think, and I haven't read this article, but what I think we can take from this is, yes, it does take longer to build a responsive site.
Yes.
Definitely. So therefore, if you're paying someone else to do it, it's going to cost you more.
Yep.
If you don't have the budget, then to be able to go responsive, then what you can take from this article is a good way to design it. So it's, if you're designing non-responsively, how to design it so it zooms well.
Yes.
That's a really good thing to take from this article.
And, you know, I thought it was a really brave article, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I did think, like, with Kenneth as well, you know, for him to step up and say, user-centric design, it ain't all that, which is essentially my how I would have said the article. He used a lot more words, but essentially,
it ain't all that.
I really think that's great that there are people out there doing that.
Mm.
And that does bring us back to this, you know, this issue we talked about in... what was it, last week or the week before? I can't remember. Where we talked about Christian Hellman's article about learning to criticise and having civility as a web design community. And I think we do. These articles are a great example of what happens if we are civil to one another, if we don't jump over people the minute that they suggest something that's different or unusual, and we actually have an intelligent debate about something, you do get great posts like this, which are really good, encouraging dialogues. And I just think it's brilliant. So
I need to go back to an earlier comment from Michael Schofield.
Yeah.
He says, this is talking about testing and the value of it.
Yeah.
We were talking about that. And she says, that actually turns out to be a hang-up with our user studies for our university website.
Right.
It doesn't hold up as real research, which it shouldn't do. As I'm saying, it's not scientific. So it's really, really effing hard to do any study that will satisfy the committee. It takes forever. I guess, yeah, well, poor you. You have to teach them that it's not scientific.
No. It's quite hard. We've had this problem with academics. I remember sitting once in front of the, what do they call them? It's not the board of directors, is it? What do they call them in universities? The directorate. Is it the directorate? Anyway, the big bosses.
Well, it was a web strategy group that I think you're referring to, which is basically a committee.
Right. And I was saying, you know, I was saying about the user testing, and we only tested 6 to 8 people or whatever. So, well, that's not a statistical base, which it isn't.
No,
there's no bloody use for that at all. And it was trying to get across to him that, you know, that user testing isn't about statistical numbers. It's not about statistically significant. It's about learning and understanding general trends and getting a sense of the site. It's much more kind of touchy-feely gooey, isn't it, than that.
Or we shouldn't do it at all.
Or we should use, you know, what we're doing increasingly with design testing, things like Verify app, where you can test, you know, 500 people at a go, you know, quite easily, and then it does become statistical. So it's interesting.
That's useful. A useful response from Paul there. Just don't do it face-to-face, do it online so you can get hundreds of responses.
But that's the design testing is different to usability testing.
Yeah, I still
it's
think
harder
you can
to test usability. Yeah, but not 500 people.
No, I guess
how would
not.
You do user testing for 500 people?
Yeah, good point. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yes, I've been really encouraged to see those posts today. All of them are challenging the normal way of doing stuff and branching out and trying new things and new approaches. And I guess I'm encouraging you, dear listener, to do the same. You know, don't just follow the crowd blindly because everybody says this is the way to do things. Make your own mistakes. You know, yeah, sure, listen to that kind of stuff, but don't be constrained by it. And don't be constrained by it just because, you know, some well-known blogger has said that this is a good idea or that's not a good idea. It's our very own Dan Sherman, Sheerman. He doesn't like it when I call him Sherman.
That's because it's not his name.
Sheer. It is Sheer. He's right.
Yeah, he is right about his name.
He is right about his name. Well, I just... See, it's funny because I just let people pronounce Boag any way they want. I don't really care.
Boag.
What was my point? Yeah, as Dan would say, you know, the thing is with all these bloggers and stuff saying this is the way that you should do things, they probably haven't designed a line of code in bloody years because they're so busy on speaking circuits and...
Oh, me
this is Dan, mind. But it's true. I mean, who am I to tell people about, you know, coding or what's right or wrong in design? Because when was the last time I designed anything other than my own website? You know, actual hands-on design.
No idea.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, make your own way. Make your own mistakes. I'm a great fan of that. Let's talk about Marcus's stuff.
Okay, in my scrabble to find something to talk about earlier, basically, as I mentioned earlier on, Paul put me on to... Well, actually, it wasn't Paul. Who was it? Somebody put me on to... Oh, somebody, because you tweeted...
I tweeted asking for the people to help you.
Can someone help me? And somebody came back and mentioned the word audio, which made me which reminded me of an article post that I wrote years and years ago. It might be 10 years ago.
Now, do we say a link in the show notes?
Don't know where it is.
I'm going to see if I can find it. You carry on talking. I'm going to see
it would have been on the original Boag World stuff, I assume. I don't know. I haven't tried to find it. But anyway, I was basically talking about the use of music and audio on websites. This was kind of, it wasn't pre-broadband, but it was kind of back in the days of, you know, if you didn't live in a city, you didn't really have broadband. So I was sort of the question, I think, trying to remember back was, when we've all got broadband, will we see a lot more audio, et cetera, on websites? And I think I posted back to myself 5 years later to say, no, we don't. But the advent of these devices, I'll start making...
Why, you're holding up a device.
Did you hear that? Yeah, because it makes noises.
Oh, right.
I'm going to do it again because you talked over it. There you go, there's another one. So things like that and noises that we're all thoroughly... you know, we're used to, yeah.
And the swoosh of an email going out.
All of that stuff is every day to us now. So anyway.
But it was before. This is because me and you disagreed when you wrote this post, right?
Have you found it?
No, I haven't found it, but I just remember disagreeing with you when we discussed it on the podcast. I am still looking for it. And I would say, yeah, we should do this. You know, that when you add something to your shopping basket, you should get audio feedback and things like that. And you go, no. And every time I talk about this online, everybody goes, no, we don't want audio on the web, no. And I think it's because people have got it in their head that I'm talking about, like, flash audio, you know, like you used to have the background music.
Yeah, when you went to a website for the first time and it played you a minute's worth of audio that you couldn't turn off.
Yes. I'm not good. I just think we're so happy having it on our phones, we're so happy having it on our computers, but if you put it on a website, you shall burn in the depths of hell.
Yeah, I think it's basically if you... Well, I'm going to go on to this article. It's a Smashing Magazine article. It's called Designing with Audio, What is Sound Good For?
Yes, because I haven't read this article, so...
And I have to say, it was a fairly lengthy article that I've kind of skipped through, but I'm going, yeah.
So, you haven't read it, have you?
I've read some of it. But I'm going to just go through to the points. She talks about, it's by Karen Kalshansky. Oh, I wish I should have got you to say that.
No, leave me alone. Don't pick on me.
She starts off by saying, our world is getting louder, considering all the beeps and bops from your smartphone that alert you that something is happening, blah, blah, blah. So feedback on appliances and Siri and all this kind of stuff. The audio is becoming more and more accepted. But going back to what I was saying earlier, you still don't find it on, or it's still seen as a bit annoying on a website. You know, you go to, I think it's the... I buy those Nespresso coffee pods.
Yeah.
And I think they have like little beeps and bops on the buttons and things like that. And you just go, oh dear.
Right.
And you shouldn't do, because we accept it as fantastic interaction design when it's on a device like an iPhone. So why? What's the difference? Anyway, but I'm going to go into the article a bit more. So where we find audio... mobile. So much of the web is moving to mobile, which of course entails smaller screens and people on the go. But besides creating mobile-specific websites, there are ways to augment the mobile experience with audio when people aren't looking at or can't interact with the screen. Sorry, I didn't read that very well. But I think the point is basically we're surfing the web with mobiles as well as using mobile phones for phone calls and email and the like. Oh, look. Paul's doing music in the background.
What, somebody just posted a URL, and I wondered whether it had audio on, but it doesn't seem to, so I have no idea why they posted it. Carry on.
But I think the point that
so you knew I was doing email in the background because it pinged.
Exactly. Yeah, but did I need to know that?
No, probably not.
I think the point is that we're using our mobile devices a lot more. We're using the devices that we expect have audio feedback on to do the stuff that we used to only do on desktop.
Yes.
Now... But if you're designing in a responsive site, can you make it just do the audio stuff
on the mobile
device part of it? If you wanted to, if it was something that made sense to do.
Yeah.
The fact that we're doing a lot more stuff on mobile kind of maybe means it's now time to start considering audio as part of the design process. And that's the main message that comes from this article. Don't stick it on afterwards.
No, you can't do that.
It must be very much part of, you know, sort of the design from the ground up.
Yeah.
So this, I suppose if it's a call to action or if it's something that you need to get feedback on, when you're wireframing it, even at pen and paper stage, you need to be saying, okay, this is super highlighted. We're gonna super highlight this by adding some audio. Kind of audio thing over the top of it.
I think it suits... applications. Do you know what I mean? Whether you're if you're building a web-based application, you know, the example I gave was an e-commerce transaction, which is a very much an application experience. I think with things like that, it works so well. I don't think, you know, it's like anything, isn't it? You can overuse it. You can screw it majorly. And that can apply to typography, it can apply to color, it can apply to your choice of imagery, animated GIFs, you know, video, anything. That it, you know, it's using it subtly and with a light hand that's so important. But I do think it's got its place, and absolutely. And that's just what you focus on is the idea of little beeps and swishes and stuff like that. But there's also other elements of audio that I think increasingly you need to think about. For example, these videos that we're starting to produce on websites, you know, audio, as in music, for those.
Well, this is where really this is area. Kind of where I was talking. There was two sides to the original article and the feedback article I did. There was this idea of instruction and sort of information and feedback, if you like, interaction. That is beeps and the kind of iPhone noises that we were talking about earlier. But yeah, I mean. Other examples of places where you've got a lot of audio happening are games.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly acceptable to have a backing track that you can turn off, but a lot of people don't because it adds to the mood of what you're doing. Now, there may be, and I'm really struggling to think of an example, but there may be examples of websites where that is... Yeah, where that would make sense to have some sort of mood setting music, rather than instruction.
The one that always gets me is there's a couple of examples of it. There's the kind of motion graphics, motion kinetic typography type of stuff, videos, or the little animated things that introduce your product or your service. Mm. They often have audio behind music behind them, and fairly intrusive audio as well. That's kind of upbeat. We're setting a tone here. But then there's other things where they do like interviews with people or screencast type stuff where someone's talking over and it's mainly a voiceover that's behind it. Mm. And some of those don't have any background audio and some do. And background audio in that, I'd be interested to know what you think. It can either be really helpful and add a richness to the video, and it makes it sound more professional rather than just a person like this talking into a microphone, or it can be really annoying and you just want to kill it.
Coincidentally, every week when I edit this podcast, when the intro music finally fades out, it's like, oh, it all sounds a bit rubbish now.
Right. Yeah.
And because it's just me and you in a room going meh, meh, meh at each other. Whereas that was I'd spent quite a bit of time on that intro track.
Yeah.
And
but if you had it running through the whole thing, it would just be, you'd want to kill yourself.
I don't know. Because I've never listened to it running through the whole thing.
Well, here's an right. Okay.
Yeah.
Starting now. Right. Like, from now to the end of the show, run some background music behind it.
And see who's killed themselves.
And see how many of our three listeners kill themselves.
Yeah. Okay.
That's really cool. So, yeah, really interesting that a subject. It fascinates me. Now, I've got something. Daniel seems to be trying to show me something really cool in the chat room from the New York Times. Scroll the document to the link. Target media within the document. I don't quite understand what he's getting at, but it's... Has this got audio on it and I'm just not hearing it?
You carry on talking. I realise I haven't got a joke.
You've got media in the... No, I'm not.
Yeah, that'll do nicely.
Ooh. Okay, well, I don't quite understand why this, but it looks very pretty and I quite like it. So I'll put a link in the show notes and people can work it out themselves and show me why I'm being ignorant, and that should be in it, really. Okay, anyway, that about wraps it up, except for our joke. Now, did you get a little sound effect when you swished your iPhone then to get a joke? Oh, I think you did.
No.
That's very disappointing.
No, no sound effects on the Boag World app.
There needs to be. Yeah. I might add some to the website. technically, I haven't even looked at how you would do this. Introducing audio. Because you're not... Yeah, I mean, there's an HTML audio tag. What am I talking about? This is easy. Fine. Yes.
Okay, joke?
Yes, joke. Sorry.
I once went on a date with a girl I met at Marks and Spencer's.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shop, by the way. For anyone who doesn't know. But she wouldn't... sorry.
You just took away the...
No, I haven't. I'll start again. Right. Concentrate, Marcus. I'm catching it off you, the inability to, talk. Yeah, exactly. I once went on a date with a girl... you know what the problem is? I can't read it.
Ah, because you haven't got your glasses on.
Yeah, glasses are downstairs. Right, here we go. Far enough away. I once went on a date with a girl I met at Marks and Spencer's, but she wouldn't let me try anything on.
That's terrible. And that will mean nothing to anyone that doesn't know what Marks and Spencer's is.
Well, it's a shop. I said it was a shop.
Yeah, but it's got...
or it's a clothes shop.
It's a clothes shop that helped.
Well, it's more than a clothes shop. Yeah. It's got all sorts of stuff.
But it's well known as a kind of place you try stuff on.
Yeah.
It's still a terrible joke.
It kind of made me smile in a kind of smiley kind of way.
Okay. This podcast is going downhill. It really is. Check out Unfinished Business. That's a good podcast you might want to try instead of us. What other ones are there? There's loads of much better web design podcasts out there now, guys. Just go and find them and just give up on us. That'd be fine.
No, don't. This is good fun.
It is
just fun. Paul can't talk properly this week, and I had a little bit of not being able to talk properly, but I'm back again.
So basically, what we're saying is that you're long-sighted to can't read anything. I've got senility going in. Give it a few years, there'd just be a couple of grumpy old whingy men. Well, we already are. We're doomed. Anyway, thank you for listening. There's some great stories this week. Let us know what you thought about the live broadcast for those of you that were involved. For those of you that won't, if you like the idea of a live broadcast and you want us to continue, can you post that in the show notes, which would be boagworld.com/season/5/episode/...
How many forward slashes?
SO5, EO5.
Yes, that's it.
Or alternatively, just go to bragboard.com/show and select the appropriate episode, which would probably be a lot easier.
Yes.
And won't involve so much slashing. So, yeah, let us know about that. And make suggestions for future episodes. We want to include more. If you want to give us an audio suggestion, you get bonus points, and we will definitely include your article on the show.
Paul will take you out to dinner.
I'll not. Because you might be a weirdo psycho. All right, thank you very much, and goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
The podcast for those involved in designing, developing, and running websites on a daily basis.
Bye.